So good morning. This is a very different kind of policy matter, but in fact it's equally, if not more, complex. So in 2007 and 8, there was growing frustration at the Senate Appropriations Committee about the problems of foodborne outbreaks, and there were a number of very visible ones, some related to produce, which is perhaps the biggest problem, and you might remember the peanut butter outbreak. So there's a succession of others, and all of that led to that committee asking the FDA to commission at the Institute of Medicine a report basically calling for help. And you've seen a couple of pictures of the report, and there it is. So I'd like to start with a little bit of a primer on foodborne illness and how difficult it is. Like vitamin D levels, it's a very, very difficult to get a handle on. First of all, it's very difficult to identify foodborne illness. There's nothing special about the way that illness looks clinically, and the health professionals may or may not suspect it. There's varying use of labs. We know very little about it, about the long-term health effects, if any, of foodborne illness, such as we do know about mad cow disease, and we have policies in place, but very little else. And then there's a question about what is food. So it turns out when you get deep into, I was going to say the bowels of FDA, but that's pushing metaphor. In fact, their responsibilities are very large, and I'd like to talk about all of these, but they're all things that you eat or could eat, so it's very complex as to what even food is. Another problem is attribution of illnesses, and so much of what we know are from outbreaks, and there's actually an argument in the foodborne epidemiology community about whether it's only outbreaks or whether you get endogenous rates of disease at all times. I'm in the latter category myself, but I don't think that's particularly important. So it's not hard to understand that people don't know what they eat. People eat often at restaurants, and even if you eat at home, you don't know what the recipes are, and it becomes very, very difficult to try to understand where outbreaks or individual cases might come from. And in fact, half of the putative foodborne outbreaks, that is, they have the right organisms and they look like it, the actual food is never identified. And that, I think, is probably the signal problem. So outbreaks and disease occur locally and nationally, and the question is, who should do this work? And we did address this. It's complex because, of course, a lot of the good work is done at the local and state level with respect to foodborne disease control. The FDA has great responsibility and oversight for all of this. But as you know, the states differ dramatically in how much they attend to foodborne safety and other public health matters, and that becomes the jurisdictional issue becomes important here. There's also some resistance from industry and agriculture to regulation of all kinds. Nobody's surprised by all of this. I wanted to make one point. One of the things that we learned, that I learned anyway, I think other people on the committee knew this, was that there's actually a shadow food safety system. That is, the large manufacturers and transporters and distributors actually run their own system, have their own criteria. Now, they're responsible to FDA and other local and federal jurisdiction, but in fact, a lot of the big companies, for a variety of reasons, actually have their own systems and approaches that really, in some ways, duplicate what FDA does. in a regulatory sense. There's always a problem of physical and chemical contamination. We spend much more time on basically on bacteriological contamination than and its products than anything else. Foods are tested periodically for various chemicals. They're tested for rarely for degraded food, rarely for radiological contamination, unless there's a hypothesis. But all of this is in the picture and becomes possible. Also, what I have is number six. The locavore movement has changed everything. There are more and more small farms and farmers markets, and I don't think we really know whether there's much of a problem. I think the bad news is that probably there isn't the kind of control that one might hope for. The good news is that they're local, and so they're not going to have the kind of impact that national distributors would have. So all of this becomes an added problem of unknown magnitude. So this just looks at what are we facing here? And if you can't even attribute half the outbreaks to a particular food, it's very difficult to say what the rates of foodborne illness are. And so we probably have something like 5.2 million bacterial episodes a year, of which most are probably foodborne related. Parasitic disease, almost all are. Viral disease, including rotaviruses and things, are almost never, I mean, relatively small number, 5% maybe of 31 million. But the experts who count this up, and I think it's pretty good information, suggest that there are over 60,000 hospitalizations a year and maybe between 1 and 2,000 deaths because of foodborne disease. And the deaths are often dramatic, and sometimes they're attributable to certain foods, and it plays very highly in the public. If you count outbreaks, it's not clear that the number and types of outbreaks are actually changing much over the years. This just looks at what happened in 2007 versus the prior 5 years, and basically the rates are pretty similar for these common bacterial sources. But given how difficult it is to understand the sources and causes of foodborne disease, I think we have to be careful with this. But it doesn't look like there's a great increase or a great decrease. Well, the fact that it's fairly stable, I think, suggests that control is working at some level, that it's not getting out of hand as the population increases, as we import more food, and so on. So this just looks at most, I like the term, most probable estimates, but because of the problem. And you can see that over on your right that the it's really produce more than anything else. Of interest, the other group toward your left is meat and poultry and so on. And some of this is actually the jurisdiction of the Department of Agriculture, which is one of the organizational issues that we talked about in a long succession. So let me just briefly tell you a little bit more about what we did and some of the policy decisions that we weighed in on, and I'll leave it to your questions, actually, to try to address many of these in more detail. I need to tell you that one of the things that's happened to me in the almost 2 years since we did this report is that I've learned a lot more about foodborne disease, and I think if I had it to do over, I probably would have done it. I recommend it a little bit differently than we did it, and the knowledge moves on, and so I have to be careful about what the report said and how I feel, and I'll try to separate those out. So here are just some of the challenges, some of which I've told you about. There are so many food safety domains. Global health in general, because we import so much, trade treaties, national security, much of this we didn't actually address, labor management relationships. One of the great lessons I learned actually locally in Iowa was that some of the growers and farmers that I talked to, because I was on this committee, actually told me that one of the best things you can do is to have good labor management relationships on farms, because then the workers are more likely to do the right thing and urinate in the right places. Okay, so it really was something that had never occurred to me, given what I do. There's competing quality assurance measures and lots of regulatory groups. I mentioned already that there's a high public interest in visibility, which is how the Senate got involved in this in the first place. There's a lot of advocacy, and there are many reports out there that know how to fix the food safety system. There are many government agencies involved, and that, I think, becomes an issue of some magnitude. And not surprisingly, I told you that data was complete. So here are some of the agencies. So, of course, there's FDA, and CDC does a lot, works very hard at doing a lot of the surveillance and control in partnership with FDA, the Department of Agriculture, and then EPA gets involved in chemical contamination and several other important aspects of food safety. But then you start to go down this list, and I really can't go through all of it, but you can imagine how much problem there can be in transporting food around the country. I mentioned labor in OSHA. The Department of State has to deal with our trade treaties, as I mentioned, because it's important to know there are certain things that we can't ask of other countries if, in fact, there's a treaty obligation, and so that becomes a particularly sticky issue. And for the most part, we didn't go there. We didn't do imports, and yet we should. Homeland Security, because of the biosecurity issues. I just want to tell you that some of the routine inspection of imported food is done by the Department of Homeland Security as an arrangement with FDA and the Department of Agriculture. And we have a great number of surveillance systems that I'm not going to describe to you. You can figure out some of them by the name, but I think the important thing is down the road we need to know what works and what doesn't work, and some of these are not universal across this country, and yet they all make a contribution, and the question, I think, in the end is reconciling them and trying to evaluate again whether they're worth the effort. Okay, so let me then finish with some of the policy issues. So one of the big problems that is recognized is that there's no universal system for handling data on foodborne disease, whether it comes from growers or industry or distributors. Manufacturers don't have to tell anybody what their quality control data are, unless there's an outbreak situation, and there are just lots and lots of challenges with all of this. And so one of the important things that we wanted to do was to recommend that the barriers to transfer of data be minimized, and we actually recommended creating a single national office to manage and amalgamate and analyze all important food safety data. That's almost impossible to do right now, and we hope that will come over time. It won't be surprising that some jurisdictions don't want the public to know about foodborne outbreaks because it keeps other people away. Some jurisdictions have laws that say you can't. A lot of this data are clinical, and you don't. And so there are HIPAA regulations about exchanging and releasing clinical data that have to be considered. And then. Particularly with industry, of course, there are proprietary issues, and so there are just lots of reasons why this is difficult to do. It's not just a computer interoperability problem, which is also there. It really is a substantial one. Another problem is how best to control and regulate food safety. This got us into something that was a little bit larger, I think, than we had anticipated. Lots of things that are not being done. There's a lot of science being done at the molecular level, probably not enough administrative science about how to manage, how to evaluate and manage the practices, not only of FDA, but all food safety professionals. I mentioned there are political impediments. It's hard to move bureaucracies. The questions of what we can learn from other national models, they're always out there saying you should do it like we do it, except that you only have 5 million people and we have 300 million. Lots of very difficult reasons. And so we recommended, again, more regulatory and administrative science. This was a particular hobby horse of mine. Do more outcomes evaluation, and particularly do more risk-based work all across the spectrum. And in fact, FDA has really listened to us, and we appreciated that a lot. And there's been a lot of motion on risk-based approaches to management and control that are going on right now because the director of the food side of FDA, Mike Taylor, has taken this to heart and has actually worked with the committee after the report was out to try to make this better. And so there are lots of alternative models, and I just wanted, I don't even know if you can see this very well, but it turns out there's a whole science of governance and regulation that I don't think we in the Institute of Medicine actually pay enough attention to, because there are a lot of ways to improve any public health endeavor and the benchmarks, and they could be different. And so, just to say the cliche, one size doesn't fit all. And so sometimes you need taxation. It works very well for tobacco. Sometimes you just need to educate the public. Sometimes you need economic instruments. Sometimes you need user charges. They're even in the whole spectrum here. There's even public ownership. But nonetheless, there are lots of government governing models, regulatory models, and I think in all phases of public health, we should pay more attention to how we can best get the job done and a little bit less on governmental and political ideology. So I'm not through, but here's the quiz. How do we regulate nuclear power plants and baby cribs and aircraft? And just to make the point that I just made, it turns out that the government doesn't really inspect everything here. They oversee everything, but you're pretty much in charge of your car. The Federal Trade Commission looks at baby cribs now and again. Most commercial aircraft are inspected in the private sector, and their paperwork goes to the FAA. Same with nuclear power plants. And so there are different regulatory models out there. That's the whole point of this. Another policy is how best to balance the role of federal government versus state governments. I'm running out of time, but basically our feeling was that more of the inspection and control and education process should be actually transferred to the states and jurisdictions, local jurisdictions. They're doing most of the work anyway. And we actually think that on balance it would probably be better to transfer that control, and that was the committee's judgment, and I certainly agree with this. A lot of the laws had to be changed. The Institute of Medicine does not recommend specific legislation, and while we were doing this at the end, the law was passed, actually. So we actually have much better food safety laws that were passed at the end of the last Congress, and it included such things as mandatory recall of foods, which FDA never had before, registration of growers and processors, better traceability of the food chain, both backward and forward, some better science guidance in dealing with all of this, and even things about biological warning systems. We made some policy recommendations with respect to communication of problems. We would like the federal government to speak with one voice about food safety, particularly during outbreaks, and I think that is something that needs to get together. So the final policy issue that I mentioned to you that we addressed was how do you deal with the overlapping jurisdictions, two of the most common ones are chicken pot pie and pizzas, largely because some of this is FDA and some of this is USDA. And there are probably too many agencies, and we were in a long line of people over the years recommending consolidation of agencies. Well, there's still a lot more to do. The administrative science needs to be done. We need more economic analysis. We need to study imports, which are growing. Food security, they wouldn't talk to us, actually. That needs to be done in coordination with the Department of Homeland Security. We need to bring industry into the regulatory process more fully. And apropos Patsy's presentation, we need to better understand the link between safety of food and the nutrition value of food, which we didn't talk about at all. So I'll try to answer some questions later, but thanks to everybody who's involved in food safety, and it's really a lot of people at all levels, public sector, private sector, manufacturers, and a particular thanks to the committee who put all of this together and I think has made a difference. Thank you very much.